Now, first of all, it's very healthy to grow spiritually with your husband. That's very healthy, because a lot of couples, one grows a little bit more than the other, and then the one who grows more, like you're saying, they want to concentrate on other things, and it starts affecting the marriage. It's very important that the growth is together. And if it starts going out of control, then so you got to do it in a very smart... First of all, women are much more smarter and powerful than the men. So if it's the woman that's growing more, she can find her ways how to pull the husband with her. Women are much more sophisticated than men. Men are very pretty simple. Now, if sometimes the gap is that the woman is growing and the man is not, then sometimes her growth has to be more spiritual, but physically she has to stay with him. Has to be done with a very good guide. Ultimately, you want to grow with your husband. And the way to do it is to really know him, like you're saying, best friend, that you know how you can pull him to your level. Now, there's constantly in a husband and wife the relationship of what's called a mashpia and a mekabel. In most cases, the husband has to be the mashpia. Physically, we also see that the husband is the one who's the giver. Mashpia is a giver. But really, the woman is the one who gives. The woman is in the level of the receiver, the mekabel, but if she allows her husband to give her what she needs, what's called the hashpa, then it elevates her to a higher level that she can start lashpia on him, to influence him. Now, in the sefirot, you see that the woman is malchut. This is the sefira that just receives. So one might say that the malchut is the lowest sefira, and it only receives. But if you're looking at the structure of the spiritual worlds, the malchut is the top of the world above. So if the woman is able to receive, she becomes the right channel to receive what she needs from her husband, it empowers her and elevates her to become above her husband. Now she can start influencing him. So the thing is that, why do our sages say, "Ezo isha chachama osa et ratzon ba'ala"? Who's a wise woman who does the will of her husband? It doesn't mean chas v'shalom that the Torah means that the woman has to become now a slave to the husband and whatever he says she has to do. That's totally not what the Torah means. Rather, the woman is smarter and she can pull the husband according to his will. But basically what she brings is she brings him to his domain. And a woman can be smart, much more smarter than the husband. The problem is exactly what you said. When the ego kicks in, then that's what I said before. The ego is the screen that stops all the problems. Sometimes the woman needs to be smart and to know when to lower the ego to be able to bring the husband to her. And once she brings the husband into her domain, he will give her the ashpa'ah that she needs to get. By default, she will rise above him and will be able to lashpia on him. So that's where the woman has the power to elevate the husband. And the way the woman does it is with the three mitzvot that the women have to concentrate on, which is chala, nida, and candles. You know, when we sing Eshet Chayil on Shabbat, there's a verse that we say, Sheker Achen Vehevel Ayofi. If you take the word Achen, the grace, it has Hey, Chet, and Nun. These are the three mitzvot that the woman has to focus on. Then she gets this grace in the eyes of her husband. Hachen, hey, is hadlakat nerot. Chet is chala, and nun is nida, family purity. So when the woman is concentrating on these three to do it the right way, her husband finds chen in her, the grace. That's where I'm talking about, the woman pulls the husband to her. Again, it's hard to see the connection, because a woman says, "No, I don't see a connection. Me lighting candles, that's what you're telling me? We're lighting a match." Spiritually, the Zohar explains that in the candle, why do you light candles? Okay, so we know it says Chava, she turned off the light of the world, so you have to light, bring back the light to the world, and the candle brings Shalom Bayit into the house, etc., etc. We know all the explanation. But the Zohar says that in the light of the candle, physically, if you look at the candle, you'll see two types of lights. But there's a third type of light in the candle. The black light, that it's between the wick and the fire, the Zohar calls it Nehora Ukma, the dark light. And that's connecting between the physical and the spiritual, because the wick is physical and the fire is spiritual. So this black light is connecting the physical and the spiritual. That light affects your nefesh. Then you have the yellow light, the yellow and the blue light. And that affects your ruach. This is the obvious light. And then there's a light that is called Nehora Setima, the concealed light, the light that you can't see. This is the light that affects your neshama. That's why you cover your eyes when you light the candles. So some go by the rules of Ashkenaz, some Sephardi, they light before the bracha, after the bracha. That's really according to halacha. But the spiritual part that you cover your eyes is because the physical eyes, they see the physical flame. But when you cover your eyes, you empowering the spiritual light to affect your neshama. Now, if you do that 10 minutes before Shabbat, when you dressed, and after you took a shower, and everything is ready, and you're relaxed, and you meditated a little bit, you did your tshuva, you gave some charity, you prayed mincha, you prepare yourself, then this striking of a match becomes extremely powerful. It's not just a match. But when you do it rush, in the 18 minutes, and balagan, and a mess, and the kitchen is and screaming in the entire house, you're not focusing on now meditating on what you're actually igniting. Hold on, one more. Then you have the challah. Most women, they don't find any interest in doing challah. They don't, okay, well. This is one of the most powerful mitzvot that the woman can do. Because the same way that if you're taking flour, if you look at flour, it's millions or thousands of these dust of flour. What are you taking? You're taking water. You're mixing it and you're gluing all these how would you say gargirim in Hebrew, in English? The grain, not grain, the seeds. Flour is like these microscopic grains. And the water unites them together and you're making one dough. So with this act, spiritually, you're creating unity in the home. Between the father and the husband and the wife, between the parents and the kids. You're uniting the entire family together. And then when you eat it, and it becomes one with the body of the family, then you put this power in the body of the family. More than that, that if you see that the word chala is chet lamed hey, has the same letters of the word chole, sick. When the woman is concentrating on doing the chala, she removes all the sicknesses away, spiritual, emotional, physical, mamash. So I'm giving you that in a very short version, but that you see the importance. And then nida, I don't even need to explain this, the family purity. Because the impurity that a woman has from the blood of her cycle is so powerful, and if she doesn't purify it the right way, cleans it and removes it, then she carries this impurity. Impurity is the opposite of holiness. So all these three elements, if the woman is very particular on, and a lot of women say, okay, I'll go to the mikveh. But they're not really particular with all the little dinim, counting the right way, the 7 days, and checking how it's supposed to be checked, and all the dinim, there's reasons for that. It's not to make your life hard. So when the woman is really concentrating and putting all her efforts on these three mitzvot, what she does, her husband finds this chen in her. He will follow her like he was before the marriage, before the chuppah. So you want to empower this grace, you'll be able to pull your husband to your level. Because ultimately, women are much more holier than men. That's why they don't need to do so many things. Men need to pray 3 times a day. You only have to pray once. Men have to learn Torah and mitzvahs and tefillin and tzitzis. And a woman does it with a few mitzvot and she's done.
So in other words, to let the husband, I find it's true, because if the husband is not the mashbiya, I find it defensiveness or trying to assert, I don't even
know.
Let them be the mashpia, but
you these mitzvot almost behind the scenes. You know, men are very simple. Even in the spiritual level, women are much more holier than men. Men are simple. You just give them their basic things that they need. You're very easy. A smart woman can really pull her husband into her domain. I'm not saying it in a negative way, the woman controls him. I'm just saying, a smart woman, why does it say a smart woman does the will of her husband? Because the will of her husband is to be close to Hashem. and to make his wife a queen and to grow with her and have a beautiful relationship. But the men find it hard to find the real ratzon, this ratzon ba'ala. So you're doing it in some kind of, let's call it a tricky way. But if you empower your spiritual level the right way, it will pull your husband. The thing is that the relationship is, this is where you have to remove your ego, because he has to be a mashpia. But if you pull him the right way, he will want to be the mashpia. And then becomes a cycle. That's why, you know, one of the things that signifies the kiddushin is a ring. Okay, you need a kinyan, you need something that is worth something. But the point of the ring is the circle. This unity that never ends in a circle. He's mashpi on you, you get it, you mashpi on him, and so forth, and you constantly grow. And there's nothing wrong with your husband being your best friend. It's very healthy. Has to be done the right way, with the right limits. But it's very healthy that the husband and wife are friends. But they also have to know when they're not friends and when they're husband and wife. That's why the whole concept of the family purity is so smart. That's when you're not best friends anymore. Now you have to be separate. So, you know, if you want to bring your husband to your level, you have to really refine yourself, totally removing your ego, no doubt. Then you are what's called a kli ra'uy. You become the vessel that then he can come and lashpia. And don't worry, you do it the right way, you'll empower him. Then you grow slowly, slowly together. And there's nothing wrong if you're growing faster, so he'll catch up. And again, if you're doing it the smart way, he will catch up too. And sometimes you have to know, you know, when you're saying about the ego, one last thing. Sometimes a woman grows and grows in her spiritual level, and she wants her husband to be, you know, a dayan, a big rabbi. And it's not him. He's a businessman. Or he's a simple man, and he doesn't want to learn Torah all day long, and whatever. But he has amazing midot. And he's very honest in business, and he's an amazing father, and has so many good things, that's his character. And you know, okay, so you want him to be more learned. Okay, so that's not the husband you got. I'm not saying you, I'm saying sometimes we have high expectations. That's the same thing with kids. That we have too much expectations from the kids. So when they don't do what I expect, then I get disappointed, so I am upset at them. So same with the husband. Husband and wife. The point is not to have expectations. If you don't have expectations and you let the person do naturally what they're supposed to do, and you nourish their neshama to do what they're supposed to do, then you don't get disappointed, because they operate and they're acting how they're supposed to act. This is part of the midah of anava. It's not to have these expectations. He's supposed to do this. He's supposed to do that. We can change our spouse's character. The ofi, we can't. That's the main mistake that couples have, is they think that they came to change my husband. If he's lazy, he's going to be lazy. If he's going to throw the underwear on the floor, he's going to throw the underwear on his floor all his life. You can't change it. You have to learn how to move between. Because you can't change the character of another person, husband or kids. That's the problem with parents. They think they can change the character of the kid. Instead of nourishing the character, trying to change it. Then that's where you deal with head to head. So ultimately you want to be much more refined yourself. By you refining yourself, you also know how to, you know, maneuver situation. You know, women are called in Hebrew keret habayit. Now keret habayit is not that you mop the floor. That's not a keret habayit. A keret habayit comes from the word ikar habayit, the main part of the house. The husband is a guest in the house, spiritually. And a woman, if she's not accepting the husband on Shabbat, you have to have in mind, when you light your candles on Shabbat, you have to have in mind that you are accepting the Torah and mitzvahs that your husband did that Shabbat, and you're accepting him, whatever he did. And then he's welcome to walk into the house. That's why it says that when the husband walks in from shul on Erev Shabbat, two angels come with him. That's why we sing Shalom Aleichem, we are welcoming the angels. But if you're not welcoming the husband when you light the candles, he's not going to come into the house, and the angels are not going to come into the house. So ultimately, the woman is much more important. That's why she's called Ikar Habayit, the main part of the house. Because if the woman is centered and focused, the entire house will be balanced. And the woman can control the entire environment in the home. She's much more powerful. That's why Hashem said, I'm not going to occupy you with mitzvot, Because I want you to be occupied with being centered, and like you said, cooking is a mitzvah? Yeah. Because you're centering and balancing the house. So it's a mitzvah.